Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Federal authorities say a Pennsylvania man now faces charges after they found an explosive device in a bag checked at the Lehigh Valley International Airport bound for Florida. On his way out of the White House, President Biden asked about Eli Lilly's plans to cap the monthly out-of-pocket cost for insulin at $35.
Once you expose these things, it's awful hard to defend them. And once one major carrier, one major operator changes it, it changes everything.
The White House would not say if the president made any personal appeal to Eli Lilly. The number of dead in Greece rising to at least 43 in the collision of that passenger and freight train last night. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine urging Congress to pass the Railway Safety Act.
The items contained in that act are the things that some of the things that we certainly need.
Police say a 16-year-old student was stabbed to death during a fight with a classmate at a Northern California high school. This is ABC News. The U.S. intelligence community says a review of Havana syndrome finds it very unlikely that a foreign adversary or energy weapon is the cause. Instead, I think health issues, including headaches and memory loss, reported by U.S. diplomats were the result of pre-existing conditions or conventional illness.
The thing we ought to take out of this, and I think, you know, I can't speak for all members of the community in terms of the workforce, but we've got to make sure, regardless of source, if people have health care issues, they got to get taken care of.
Senate Intelligence Chairman Mark Warner. The New York Police Department has agreed to pay millions to settle claims filed by George Floyd protesters. The city and the NYPD agreed to pay each of the protesters more than $21,000. Officials in Los Angeles County voting to update building codes, requiring all high-rises that may contain brittle concrete to be retrofitted within a decade. That move in response to the deadly and devastating earthquakes that hit Turkey and Syria. Andy Field, ABC News.
Inside.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants to spend $3.8 billion on building projects around Wisconsin. The plan gets its first consideration before the State Building Commission in 3 weeks. About half the proposed spending would go to the University of Wisconsin system. Ultimately, Evers' building budget needs to be approved by the Republican-controlled legislature, and history says he won't get it all. Lawmakers cut Evers' spending proposals on building projects in each of his last two budgets. Future tuition increases at the University of Wisconsin system would be tied to the rate of inflation under a bill in the legislature. The Board of Regents froze tuition for the current school year. Governor Evers says he hasn't read the bill. In sports, Marquette beat Butler last night to win the Big East Conference regular season title outright. The Bucks beat Brooklyn to go undefeated in February. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Cut. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Speaker Voss, I understand you don't have any children. Does that mean he's been possibly practicing
sex with
contraceptives?
What?
Or is he just less than a man? How do you go through the entire life three wives later and no chitlins?
Shooting blanks?
Perhaps.
Pull and pray.
Doubtful.
Not getting any.
Unlikely.
Unable to perform.
More likely.
Paying for it.
I hate to judge.
We don't judge here. We're the Devil's Advocate.
Listen to the Devil's Advocates live weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Ingram.
They can't tell you one thing that Ron Johnson has done to support them. I don't understand that. I never will understand it. I know we've got conservative listeners, but I asked them to point to one thing that Ron Johnson has done to make their lives any better. And they can't point to any of it.
Conversations that hit home every day. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing, advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
Or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, according to the good folks over at the Taxation and Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, thanks, Ohio. Ohio lawmakers are pushing through a tax bill right now as we speak. 89% of the tax cut that they're looking at giving away going to go to the top 20%. For those folks making 50 grand or less, you're going to see a whopping $3. $3. That means you might be able to afford one of those vintage bottles of Trump water. Maybe going to get it. If you're lucky. Wow. Anyway, I'm going to share some thoughts on what's going on in Ohio, especially around this train derailment and just how horrible this is and what has to happen. Again, this is one of those moments where I'm hoping working people, again, put down the red hat, put down the blue hat. As Rupert Murdoch said, it's not red or blue, it's green, and start really coming together. I'm hoping this happens. That's why I've asked John Russell to come talk with us. John is the owner and editor of the Holler newsletter, their website. TheHoller.co. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Classic politics for rednecks and hippies, the tagline. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be on here. Excited to talk a little bit.
So, real quick, you know, what are the conditions right now? We've all seen the videos. We've all seen the horrible mushroom clouds. We've all heard the stories of how bad the water is. As of right now, how bad are things?
Yeah, thanks for picking this story up. It deserves attention because it goes beyond just East Palestine. I grew up in this county. You know, unfortunately, we're no stranger here in the Ohio Valley to big polluting industry. We get all the things that richer communities kick out. We make all the things that go in power, you know, everything else in the country, and we deal with the consequences. But this one was particularly bad. I will say, it was kind of a scale, and this is a good thing. It was big enough to shock people out of their political corners. We can get into that. You asked how bad it was. It's pretty bad. You know, you go there into town, and the EPA is saying one thing. The government agencies are saying the air and water are safe. Most of that testing is sponsored by either, you know, the state or the company, and they're telling folks to get back in their house. The people are going back in their house. Their eyes are burning. COPD is flaring up. You can throw a rock into the creek and a chemical sheen comes up. It's just people have really realized that they're on their own out there and that what they're being told doesn't measure up with what their body's telling them.
Now, one of the things that I think is really important, and I've seen this organization, the River Valley Organizing, they've come up with a list of demands. And this is one of the first times that I can remember where people who have been affected by these kind of tragedies, by these kind of disasters, have come up and said, look, It's time for you got to pay up front. We're not going to wait a decade, two decades to find out that we're going to have birth defects and cancers and all kinds of stuff. You're going to have to, it's time for you to help us get out of here, buy up our homes, help move us, do all of these things on the front end instead of the rear end. I think that's really important, and I think it's something that I haven't seen before.
I'm glad to see it too. And you know what? This is River Valley Organizing is a unique organization. So number one, they brought about 200 members of the community out. They hit the streets, good old fashioned shoe leather. They knocked on doors, asked what people wanted to say, what they needed. They've been offering some independent testing of their own. They held a town hall. They came up with five demands, and those deserve to be heard. It's relocation. They're demanding relocation for anyone who wants it, independent testing, ongoing medical testing and monitoring, disposing of this toxic waste safely. We got to get into that because they're right in the same county as the nation's largest hazardous waste incinerator, taking contaminants from the spill and burning it right back into the air in the same county. And the last one is that Norfolk Southern pays all of the cost. Now, what you said is absolutely the playbook here. I think Norfolk Southern's a $55 billion corporation. They're counting on a little Rust Belt town to, throw up the hands and say, oh, well, looks like another accident. But none of these industrial things, these disasters that happen are accidents. They're all preventable. And the last thing, I want to say about River Valley Organizing is I've spent a long time, even, professionally, on the political side of things. I'm familiar with nonprofit organizations. Usually when these things crop up and they have organizing in the name, it's a halfway house employment-wise for Democratic staffers that are in between political campaigns. That's not River Valley Organizing. This is made up of people who you would not want to tangle with in a bar fight, and they are speaking up for themselves, and they are coming from all working class backgrounds. It really is a class consciousness thing, and they're being loud, and they should be, because what happened here in East Palestine needs to stay in the news, and people need to continue to be loud about it so they don't just get pushed around.
No, I've been saying for a very long time. In fact, we traveled through Ohio during the election about last year, and I was saying the entire time, it's not about red hats and blue hats, it's about hard hats. And Rupert Murdoch gave us the bumper sticker of our time. It's not about red or blue, it's about green, and that fits here. It is about the green. And this is one of these moments, John, where I'm hoping that, put down your Trump flags or your Biden flags, or your red hats and blue hats, and say, look, we working people are getting screwed time and time again by deregulation that allowed this railroad to operate in a less safe manner. And we've been talking about that for a year on this program. We've had rail unions come on and tell that this is going to happen. And look what happens. And, we've had people, environmentalists, talk about the kind of things that corporations get away with for decades. And maybe now is, let me pose this as a question. Is this now the moment that finally we put down the red hats and the blue hats and start going, they don't care about us on either side of the aisle?
Yeah, I think you're nailing something that I've felt on the ground. I grew up in this county. I've spent my girlfriend and I, and working with another organization, have spent the last 10 days up there talking to residents. And I was shocked that I met a lot of people from high school up there, and I knew a lot of folks there, and they were right wing back in the day, and I met them, and they're still right wing. But when it comes to this. That is unique about East Palestine. This disaster was large enough in scale to shock people out of their political corners. There's a media thing happening around this. It may be a political thing everywhere but East Palestine. But in East Palestine, you can talk to people that are decked out head to toe in right-wing merch who will look at your camera and tell you the CEO of this company that blew up a train full of hazardous chemicals in our town doesn't know what life is like here. He's making $8 million a year living in a giant mansion, thinking that he can just operate his company, spill chemicals everywhere, not face any consequences, and we're here to tell him different. I mean, that kind of thing will come from the mouths of people who are there to see Trump come through town, right? So the political corners There was a parade of national political figures that came through there. There's a little bit of return back to that. But by and large, this was a moment, and it was unique in that where people looked at where people looked at how business was really done and started to ask questions. Can the politicians that are coming through here that are taking money from Norfolk Southern, can we really expect them to hold this company accountable? What are we really owed, and who does the government really work for? That has been the questions that are coming back to us from residents in East Palestine. I don't think one moment is going to shock us out of the kind of toxic politics that we've had for a long time. I think a lot of moments are going to take that, but this is one of them. Yeah. That we can count on. It's been good to see.
But for me, this is one of those moments where, you know, I look at this and as an outsider go, the reality is I listened to the Republicans go on about how, you know, the government isn't doing anything. You know, where's the government? Well, they've been the party of government shouldn't do anything. We don't want government around. We're going to defund it. We're going to do everything we can do to break it. And yet when bad things happen, the first person they blame is government. And I would argue in this moment, the federal government, the Biden administration, did everything that they were supposed to do. The wheels turned as they were supposed to. I think where they fell down, and we could agree or disagree, where they fell down is they didn't do the PR. The appearance was they didn't care. If it were me, I would have had an army of FEMA people with trailers and water and everything waiting at the Ohio border to go marching in and say, look, we're just waiting for the governor. Just waiting for the governor's call. It's the appearance that I think is even more important than the actual doing. But I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, let's take it back a little bit further, because I think that this was a real missed opportunity for the party that calls itself the party of the working class to really show that it is. And I would say why I got involved in this story, number one, it's in the county where I grew up. I live two counties south now. But I cover labor politics in my newsletter. And 7 weeks before this derailment, I went to cover the rail strike that never was. And I was talking to union rail workers there who said to me 7 weeks before this derailment, hey, the corporate practices of these railroads, something called precision scheduled railroading, your audience will know about it.
Yep.
That's putting pressure on, you know, it's cutting staff, safety, training, maintenance. There's all kinds of unregulated safety things that we just rely on the company to do safely. All of these things are putting pressure on us, and they are going to put the public at unnecessary risk of a catastrophic derailment. A rail worker told me this 7 weeks before it happened. And then sure enough, here we are. Now, I would say back then, the Biden administration should not have imposed a contract on striking workers. That would have been the first time they could have shown up and said, we are on your side. We're going to hear your demands. We're going to take them up and challenge the rail companies. That was a perfect time to do it. Unfortunately, I've been on a lot of picket lines. I've covered the John Deere strike, the special metals strike in West Virginia at a plant owned by Warren Buffett. At every one of those picket lines, I would have loved to see the administration move the White House there, stand on the picket lines. I was down in West Virginia. I saw a state senator Republican handing out hot dogs. There wasn't a Democrat in sight. We have to have, if we're truly the party of the working class, then you have got to be there. You have got to take it up before catastrophic things like this happen, because rail union workers have been warning about it for a long time.
No, amen.
Somebody's got to stand with them.
No, the reality is I've been calling for Democrats to adopt a striker through all of this strike activity. They should borrow Obama's comfortable shoes, the ones he never wore, because this is what they should be doing. And you're absolutely spot on right. But the sad reality is, and I keep coming back to, it's the performance is one thing. It's the legislation. It's what they do. It's completely different. And that's where my struggle is. I wish the party of the working class would get their heads out of their, the other side of this. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with John Russell. John is the owner and editor of the Holler newsletter. The holler.co is the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Tagline, class politics for rednecks and hippies. Again, we'll get links out, and I can take a look at that. You can also follow him on all social media posts at Hey John Russell. We'll get links out as well there. But you know, here's the thing, John, and this, again, comes back to, you know, in this moment, the responses that you're seeing. We saw Trump come in with some water, these tokens. My fear is that that becomes the end of it. That the mainstream media then uses what they needed out of it politically, and you guys are left aside. What power, what mechanisms do you think are left once the spotlight goes away? Because there's going to be another disaster. There's going to be another spotlight moment. What do you think they have? What leverage do you think they have once this is all, once the cars are gone?
It's an important question, because that's what really powerful companies like Norfolk Southern are counting on. They want the eyeballs to go away as soon as possible so they can go back to making money. The day after this train derailed and the mushroom cloud filled the sky, there were rail tracks sitting there ready, and they paved right over the chemical spill and had trains running through there 3 minutes after the evacuation order lifted. I would say what's important to know here is to take the lessons that we learned in East Palestine. I think a lot of people, this was the first time they really became conscious of how powerful these companies are and how they truly don't have a side and how it truly is not about red or blue, but green. And I think that you had an entire town learn that at one time. And I think what's left there, the leverage that's left there, is to build on that knowledge and to keep showing with every derailment that happens, with every stock buyback that happens, that there are two sides that don't necessarily fit left and right here. There are people who have to work to survive, and there are people who don't have to work, whose money makes money.
Is that the lesson? So you said there are lessons here. What are those lessons? Because, you know, I listen again, I'm listening to the political, you know, winds going on here. And I listen to the Lauren Boberts and the Marjorie Greens and them. And it's all about Buttigieg. It's all about the Biden administration. You don't hear anything about Norfolk Southern. It's all about the federal government. It's there. It's not about even DeWine at that for that matter. So the lesson that I think some people are taking is, you know, Joe Biden's bad. What is the lesson from that we should take from East Palestine?
Well, here's what I'd say. When a nearly 2 mile long train is full of carrying hazardous chemicals is detonated and a mushroom cloud fills the sky and the political people want to talk about anything but that, you know that they're trying to distract from the fact and that the real thing to focus on here is corporate power and how and who really runs the country. You're talking about how there's a lot of hatred for government out there. I think in East Palestine, a lot of people realized that there's the elected government and then there's the private corporate government that exercises power in all of our lives. They're not elected. We can't hold them accountable. I think a lot of people realize that, and we got to keep the eye on the ball of who really is pushing around power in this country.
That is so spot on. Because, you know, look, I have people all the time go, you know, you love government. I go, no, I'm distrustful of government like anyone else. But I realize when, in the big picture, there are one of two entities that are going to make decisions. There's going to be a government that has to stand before me every 2, 4, or 6 years and be accountable to me with my vote. Or there's corporations who all they care about is the green. And thank you, Rupert Murdoch, for telling us that. It's all about the money, my lives, our children, our water, our homes, our communities. None of that matters. It's about the money. And for me, that's the lesson. The lesson is it's not red or blue. It's freaking green.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it. And we have to keep that ball in the air and keep as many people focused on that as possible. An entire town learned what that really means. More will learn that. And we've got to build on that if we want something to change about that.
So you say you're from the area. How are your, I didn't ask you at the beginning, how are your relatives and your family and friends doing? How have they been affected in this?
They're doing all right. I grew up 20 miles south of this. You know, it's a lot worse as you get closer up there. But really, this extends beyond. We all drink the water. We breathe the air, right? I wish I could say that it was completely clean before this. But we've been fighting big industry in the Ohio Valley for a very long time. There's a picture from 1981 of my mom in a hazmat suit protesting the nation's largest hazardous waste incinerator, where a lot of the contaminants from this site are being burned right now. we're used to it here. The folks are going to be here. They've been here the whole time. They're doing okay. And we hope that, the grandkids will have less dirty, polluting industry to fight.
Let's hope they have two arms, two legs, two eyes, and all that, and they're healthy.
Yep.
John, I appreciate the time. I hope folks will check out the website, theholler.co. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as this continues. I don't want this to go away anytime soon. I want people to get back to normal, but this issue can't go away.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. Your show's great. Thanks for everybody listening who cares about this stuff. Don't stop caring about it. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, John Russell, owner and editor there of The Holler. You can check out the website, theholler.co. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Down the top.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I said the other day, Idaho is bringing back firing squads. Now, evidently, Tennessee is going to take their lead. They're in the process of doing the same thing, but there's a guy who wants to go even further. State Representative Paul Sherrill of Sparta. He offered an amendment during Black History Month, mind you. We're going to make hanging great again. Yep. It'd be much easier if we just started hanging them. He's now apologizing. Probably was bad timing. It's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing what comes out of our... When you make things public, when they say what they mean... And then they have to backtrack. See, if I were him, I would never apologize because he meant it. This is one of those things where, and I don't. You won't hear me go, oh, I'm sorry I said that. No, I said it. I meant to say it. I own it. I may explain what I meant by it if probably dig myself deeper into a hole. No apologies. Now you got Tennessee. Again, the state with the 11th highest poverty rate in the country. They are now pushing to define what sex is. Evidently, now they're going to, whatever they decide on the birth certificate, that's what you are forever. There's no changing, nothing. And it's one of these things I'm just going, really? Are we fixated on this? I mean, I don't care. It's just a really bizarre kind of thing. I just don't care. For instance, yeah, we talked about the guy in Tennessee who, the governor, who he himself, looked pretty good in drag when he was in high school. His law would make him illegal. Well, you got another one. The guy in Texas, Texas State Representative Nate Schatzline. His name's Schatzline. Nate Schatzline. Was wearing a black sequin dress, skipping through the park in his drag performance. Can't make this up. There's a 90-second video of him, you know, going through. Evidently, the song "Sexy Lady" was playing. Oh, oh gosh! No, I mean you can't make you again. You can't make this up. He's the guy who wrote the bill there banning what he did. And there's part of me that goes, these people just so self-loathing. The kind of self-loathing, the kind of self-hatred that you have to, I mean, it's just, it's.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Federal authorities say a Pennsylvania man now faces charges after they found an explosive device in a bag checked at the Lehigh Valley International Airport bound for Florida. On his way out of the White House, President Biden asked about Eli Lilly's plans to cap the monthly out-of-pocket cost for insulin at $35.
Once you expose these things, it's awful hard to defend them. And once one major carrier, one major operator changes it, it changes everything.
The White House would not say if the president made any personal appeal to Eli Lilly. The number of dead in Greece rising to at least 43 in the collision of that passenger and freight train last night. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine urging Congress to pass the Railway Safety Act.
The items contained in that act are the things that some of the things that we certainly need.
Police say a 16-year-old student was stabbed to death during a fight with a classmate at a Northern California high school. This is ABC News.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin State Supreme Court race is officially the most expensive in U.S. history. Spending by the candidates and outside groups is now at about $18.6 million and counting. The old record was $15 million spent on the Illinois Supreme Court race in 2004. WisPolitics.com reports spending on the race between Dan Kelly and Janet Protasiewicz has more than doubled since last week's primary. Wisconsin lawmakers are looking to make the UW's merit scholarships permanent. Merit scholarships are set to end next month. Lawmakers hold a hearing today on a bill to erase the deadline. UW merit scholarships are worth $5,000. They go to students with excellent grades and test scores. In sports, Marquette beat Butler last night to win the Big East Conference regular season title outright. The Bucks beat Brooklyn to go undefeated in February. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
5 hours of special spring primary election coverage. A dozen reporters, hosts, and political experts tracking results for you around Wisconsin.
Everything from your local races to the Supreme Court.
Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly moving on to the general election.
Coverage you won't find anywhere else. And we're doing it all again for the important general election in April.
Elections or anytime, we're here for you. Your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen, Monday through Friday from 2 to 3, it's Dueling Tangents.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pulled 149 cars stretching nearly 2 miles down the track, and it was ill-equipped to detect fires and other problems. This disaster was not an accident. It was mandated by the corporate and government officials now professing outrage.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the reality is, you know, the 1970s, you know, the Watergate era brought us the, remember the movie All the President's Men? You know, it was Follow the Money. That was the frame that came out of that. The go-go 80s was, you know, greed is good. Well, thanks, Rupert Murdoch. You have given us the bumper sticker for the ages. It's not red. It's not blue. It's about green. And that should be the wake-up call for every working person in this country. It's not about the BS that they throw at us. It's about the money. It's about picking our pockets. It's about moving money from our pockets to theirs. It's about deregulating and putting assets at risk. And if you look at what we were talking about in East Palestine, it's all about the green. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, how this has gone on, how this has happened, and maybe what we need to do to start pushing back. I've asked my good friend Randy Corrigan to come talk with us. Randy is Teamsters Local 1932 Secretary, Treasurer, Principal Officer. Their website, teamsters1932.org. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Anytime you want us to come on, we'll be here. You got a great show. We appreciate being here.
So I'm looking at this frame, and I want to thank Rupert Murdoch for this, because this is what I've been saying for years on this show. It's not about the red or the blue. It's not about the silos. It's about the money. It's always the money. And Rupert very succinctly put it there. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's about profit. And this, what we're seeing in East Palestine, or the explosion in Barberton, or any of the disasters that we've seen, it's come down to the money.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting you bring up Rupert Murdoch. You know, he was the kingpin behind deregulating a lot of how we view media today. So on what we're allowed, you know, the fairness doctrine was essentially ripped away and changed as a result of his pressure to control the media and obviously have money control what everybody thinks.
And this is one of those things, again, and I love the frame is incredible, because, you know, Democrats are just as guilty as some of this stuff as Republicans are. It's all about the money. And for me, there's got to be this awakening. And for me, I keep asking, you know, when do we finally, as working people, come together and start demanding that our elected leaders, you know, stop putting us in dangerous positions, stop moving us back towards desperate times? You know, I've been saying for years, we're heading back towards the Lochner era, where if you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for poverty wages, that was your liberty, that was your freedom. It seems like we're getting back there, Randy.
Clearly, and I think that corporate America's greed, as you pointed out, just they can't control themselves. And, you know, they take the extra step and then take another, and then they chisel and they break it away, and then they go deregulate this and take away that and give us control, allow the free market to take control. Well, a complete free market equals slavery, and that's where we started as a country. And obviously, we created some rules, some regulatory factors to work us away from total free market where you owned your labor. And I think that, you know, as we, the slippery slope we keep working down, it's really important for us as working people to make sure we go to our city council, make sure we go to our school boards and understand our civic government and participate, because policymakers at the local level can influence a lot of this that's happening in addition to the national and or state stuff.
Yeah, but the sad reality, and I get this from people because I say the exact same thing. You know, we're just working so hard, working 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet. Wages have been stagnant for 40 years. You know, you've got all of these things going on that, you know, families are under a lot of pressure just to make it to tomorrow, let alone think about, you know, the future for their kids in college and future of retirement. There's so much heaped on families. So when the message that they get, you know, hey, if we give corporations all the wealth that they could have, some of it will trickle down. You know, if we deregulate, we won't have job killing regulations. And yet we find out without regulations, we end up with people getting killed.
Yeah, I think that anytime the word deregulation comes in, it should have an equal sign next to it. Workers lose. That is just what it always ends up being. Any argument to deregulate, whether it was airline industry, or the transportation industry or railroad or any of these pieces that continually gets deregulated, it's always an erosion of the rules that were put in place in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s to say, hey, you got to stop killing people. Well, you got to stop doing things in which we're putting not just workers at risk, but the general public at risk. And I think that, you know, that society for a little bit kind of gave up and felt like, well, there's nothing I can do about it. But I actually see it different. The youth now is not got a lot to fight for from their perspective because there's not as many good jobs right out the gate. And as a result, they don't have as much to lose. So they're fighting more. And so being an organizer like I am, and obviously working with lots of people all over the country, we're seeing that youth engage in a way that, you know, some of the older generations didn't engage because part of it is they don't have anything to lose because, you know, a lot of these companies ain't offering anything.
Yeah.
And as a result of them going too far, they're actually driving people, driving the workforce to be a little bit more aggressive.
I know this is an example. And in fact, in the last hour, we had Stephen Greenhouse on the program talking about, you know, some of the organizing wins and some of the big problems that people are facing. Because, look, there are a lot of organizing wins going on, but they're not equating the contracts and they're not equating to making people's lives better. And not yet. Maybe that's going to happen. But, you know, this is one of those moments of I'm waiting for that grand awakening, like my grandparents' generation, that they universally understood that, and maybe it's going to take more disasters, I don't know, but they universally understood that regulations were good for working people, that unions were good for working people, that their neighbors were good for each other instead of being allowed to be shredded and ripped apart.
We can never predict. I think history has shown we can't predict what sparks a movement of whatever it may be, like the George Floyd situation with that movement, right?
Right.
That you couldn't have predicted, even though that had been happening for a very long period of time, it just happened at that moment that organically took off and a movement was created. I actually believe that the labor movement has got a similar awakening happening right now. And there will be a moment that sparks it. And the reason why I believe that is the work that I'm doing all over the country and all of these geographies, I'm seeing workers go to city council meetings, school board meetings, and demand more. I'm seeing workers demand more, even without a contract, demand that their employer do certain things through worker power and building worker power. And we're seeing this space start to be occupied in the right way. No different than in 1934, it took a little spark of something to happen in Minneapolis that then spread to larger parts of the country. And, you know, obviously, we don't have to tell the story. You've told the story here many times to your listeners what happened there, but no one could have predicted that ahead of time. Remember, organizers for a decade were building for that to pop somewhere. They just weren't sure where it was going to actually pop.
Yeah.
And I actually believe it's happening right now in a lot of these metropolitan areas right now.
No, you're seeing the organizing, and thank goodness, because every day we keep seeing horrible stories. I'm looking at, you know, the story that just came out about these meatpacking facilities got 13-year-old kids working on the kill floor, cleaning, you know, the head splitters and doing, you know, dangerous work for a company that goes, no, we don't do that. You were found guilty of it, fined a mere pittance of a fine, and still able to operate. And I understand now Homeland Security is going to have a bigger probe into this. But, you know, if you would have told me 10 years ago that we'd still be talking about children, 13-year-olds on the kill floor, I'd go, what? You know, this isn't the Steinbeck book, is it?
History is repeating itself. Again, corporations going too far. You said it earlier when, you know, a lot of people are working 2 and 3 jobs and they're doing everything they can to balance or whatever that middle class level of lifestyle. And as a result of that, they're so distracted with being able to engage socially, culturally, to make big change, that the youngest generation coming in doesn't have that same burden. And as a lot of them are living in that house, right? They're living with their parents a lot longer than they did before. And so as a result, they can be more active. They can be more aggressive. They don't have a mortgage which to be, you know, to be worried about losing or not being able to pay the bill. And quite frankly, in some cases, that's why they're walking off the job in certain situations, because they're what do I got to look forward to? And so it's working its way in that direction by the hundreds of thousands of workers, because these corporations can't figure it out. And at some point, it's going to pop. It just is. And I think we're there. You know, I know, at least for myself, I can speak that we're trying to build that capacity to be ready for it. And I think that it's important for all of us to be ready, so that when it does happen, we just got to get our feet on the ground and get out there and make it, you know, get the work done.
No, I can see that in the industry that I've worked in for the last 30 plus years. I've worked in the LTL industry, less than truckload freight industry, for over 30 years. And you can see it here. The young people, they're not putting up with the same kind of stuff I put up with. And you've got people saying, well, they're lazy. I'm going, no, they're smart. They're not putting up with the BS and the being on call and the crazy hours. And they're just saying, don't have to, because the wages aren't what they were 30 years ago either. So this is a huge part of that. And I think you're right. I think they've had enough. And I have hope that, you know, socially, culturally, and politically, that maybe they're going to move us in a good direction. Because I don't see us in good places right now in any of those spaces.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. It's all a matter of, like, from my perspective, I'm seeing it everywhere. And I think that's because I've got teams of people all over the country that are kind of occupying the space and to be in these coalitions, to be among these workers, to be, you know, participating and agitating and mobilizing. And as a result of them, like, you know, purposefully being in that space, I get reported back as to what's happening in this city and that city. And I'm not going to spell them all out.
Right. No.
Obviously, we're working on something very strategic and long down the road. And we're hopeful that as those things start to move, and these workers kind of look at each other, it's so powerful, like we saw in San Bernardino, where these workers walked off the job. Rick, they walked off the job and met their community leaders, elected leaders, most importantly, other workers in the industry, UPS workers. These are Amazon workers that walked off the job, right? And they walked off the job, struck their employer, and immediately were met on the picket line with freight drivers, with freight handlers, with UPS drivers, UPS workers that work out of the hub and the air hub, grocery workers, you know, grocery warehouse workers, everybody that works in the industry. And the excitement and the camaraderie that they immediately felt by everybody being connected, and that they did similar jobs in a similar industry, these people were alive. And then just a few months later, when they threatened to fire one of their coworkers, they said, hey, if you don't put her back to work by next Tuesday, this was Wednesday, you got till next Tuesday or we're going to walk off the job. Guess what happened? They put that person back to work on Friday. That's worker power.
No, that's
it's happening out there.
And that's solidarity. And I say all the time, every generation has to rediscover it. But, you know, sadly, I guess what I look at is I look at what's going on in Iowa. You know, they're moving a child labor bill that's going to put, you know, children back into these slaughterhouses, and going to make it an apprenticeship program, a public-private partnership with the schools and the industry, giving industry a liability shield. I look at this stuff and I'm going, man, this is all moving us backwards and in worse ways. So I'm glad that the organizing is happening. I wish we had more stories of this stuff to be sharing with people, because I see the political winds are moving us right now, especially in a lot of Republican states, in bad directions.
Well, I will agree with you. That's, you know, I'm an individual that's always trying to inspire people and give them hope. So I don't want to give them too much doom and gloom all the time. But I will agree with you. The political winds that are happening, especially in certain states, it's kind of shocking to see what they're passing. Like 20 years ago, that would have never been anywhere near mainstream. Especially, you know, forget some of the abortion and the other issues. It's like the worker issues that, like, to see how far, like Florida passing a law, you know, that you could run somebody over if they impeded your progress. Like, what was that, about 2 years ago?
Yep.
Like, that's crazy. Like, you think it's okay to somebody's exercising their First Amendment right, and you're going to pass legislation to be able to run that person over because they got in your way when you were exiting a property? Are you kidding me?
So you see where I'm coming from then. I'm just,
yes,
kind of throwing. Yeah, I think you made my point for me, Randy. No, but this is, but it, you're right. We can't be doom and gloom. There are victories. There is a bright future. I think it's getting through the today that I think is so important. So it's important to talk about this stuff. But again, I look at what we were talking about earlier in East Palestine. There's an opportunity here. You talked about a flashpoint, that what's going to bring people around. I think this could be that, because this is Trump country. This is, the part of the country that tells us we don't want no stinking government. This is a part of the country that says, corporations are, they should have the rule of the roost. And look what corporate America has done to them. Look at the fact that they've taken more people off the trains. They've made trains bigger. They've cut inspection times down to, I don't know how you inspect a train car in 90 seconds. No idea. But they've done all this cost cutting, these corner cutting, this precision scheduled railroading nonsense, all for the almighty dollar and no other explanation.
Yeah, what the flashpoint is, I mean, man, you look back in history to figure out how you remake that or recreate it. They just never can be, I guess, purposefully agitated. They got to be organic and somehow land in the right space where people wake up and just realize they've been fooled. And you're 100% correct. But, at a certain point, people have to realize that the very individuals that they're following are actually suppressing them and getting them to fight with other people to prevent them from coming together to ask for more. And, will the incident you're referring to be that flashpoint? That's a great question.
No, I sure hope so. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Randy Corgan. He is the Teamsters Local 1932 Secretary, Treasurer, Principal Officer. Check out their website, teamsters1932.org. Last question I wanted to ask you. Marty Walsh is stepping down. I got to go over and run the NHL Players Association. Julie Sue, I think is that's how you pronounce your name?
Yeah.
She's now been put forth as the replacement. Marty came out with a very nice comment for her to move into the place. You being from California, any thoughts on her taking over as Secretary of Labor and what she'll do with her tenure?
Oh, man, she was great in California. And, obviously all of us from California are going to love to be able to pick up the phone and have that conversation. But, I think that when it came to seeing that we're talking about some regulatory factors here, I think her utilization of the rules in California, and essentially one of the things I think that was most significant is how she allowed people to become kind of ambassadors of the California Department of Labor and help enforcement, because they didn't have enough enforcement officers to actually do things. And as a result, she thought outside the box to figure out how to engage, concerned parties to become kind of pseudo enforcement officers throughout the state. And it turned into like a tenfold increase, the best of my memory, in fines and recovery of dollars that were lost by workers obviously all the spaces in which she was responsible for. And she was always open. Like anytime we would call and ask for her to attend a meeting, help set policy, help do something that locally needed to work in conjunction with something that happened at the state, extremely labor-friendly, extremely open, and always had a door and was always responsive and receptive. And even if we disagreed on a subject, she would always try to figure out how to find common ground. So I think it's great. I think it's another great selection.
Well, I was personally pushing for my friend Sarah Nelson. I would have loved to seen Sarah. She's a great choice. And what I'm hoping, and why I liked Marty Walsh, he was on the show a number of times. I thought did a great job. I want someone who's going to be more aggressive, kind of like Jennifer Abruzzo at the NLRB, really using the tools and helping working people. So we'll see. I'm hoping she gets confirmed. We'll see how that process plays out. But Randy, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Good stuff, Randy Corgan. Make sure you check out their website, teamsters1932.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Quick break, right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. Nearly 1 million coal miners went on strike in Great Britain. A period of great labor unrest marked the year leading up to the massive walkout from the mines. In 1911, dock workers and railroad workers walked off the job. Overall, workers participated in more than 850 strikes. Even school children, fed up with the disciplinary practice of caning, went out on strike. Mine workers in South Wales joined the wave of strikers. But ultimately, their actions were defeated. Undeterred by the setback, the Welsh miners demanded the Miners' Federation of Great Britain to take a vote among all miners on the question of establishing a national minimum wage. Up to that time, miners' pay fluctuated with the uncertainty of the coal markets. The miners resoundingly voted to take on the wage issue. They cast ballots 4-1 in favor of a national strike. Nearly 1 million miners answered the call. Alarmed, the Times declared the strike the greatest catastrophe that has threatened the country since the Spanish Armada. The owners of the White Star Line worried that their new ship, the Titanic, would have to travel at reduced speeds on her maiden voyage due to the coal shortage. They scrambled to find more coal, ultimately taking the supply from other ships to ensure their new luxury liner would meet the advertised speeds. Recognizing the impact of the miners' strike on industry and commerce, the government responded by passing a new law through Parliament, calling for a minimum wage to be set district by district. After 37 days, the strike was ended. Not all of the miners received the wages they had hoped for, but the strike had resoundingly proven the power of organized labor. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. You may remember yesterday talked a little bit about the ESG environment. Social and governance, the investing thing, the environmental, social, and corporate governance, you know, investing policies that, you know, corporate America gets into. And Republicans today, you know, did, along with three Democrats, pass legislation to undo that. And for me, I looked at it as this is a moment where you had every Republican, and like I said, three Democrats, John Tester, Joe Manchin and James Golden, Republican or Democrat from the House from Maine, basically, you know, doing the oil companies' bidding, because a lot of what this is a lot of companies were, you know, or a lot of these investment groups weren't investing in oil companies. They were investing in green energy, promoting green energy and social causes and companies that do good things. And you know what we're finding? What's really interesting? And I look at Starbucks. You know, Starbucks was always put up as this good hippie liberal coffee company. Always did, you know, progressive things. And you know, look at them. They're such good company. They're such good corporate people. And then you pull back the curtain and you find out they treat their workers like crap. But the PR, brilliant. And the second those workers go, no, we'd like to make a living wage, please. We'd like to be treated with dignity and respect, please. No, we would like health care and, you know, some bit of respect. Boy, do they turn ugly and do everything that the, that corporate America does. What some investment companies are saying is we just won't invest in them. If you're not going to be a good corporate citizen, if you're not going to do right by workers, if you're not going to do this, we're not going to invest in you. And for me, this is one of those things where you go, this makes sense to me. As an investor, I do want my money to grow. I want to make money because everyone does. But I want that to be used in a way that's going to make humanity better. What's wrong with that? Well, from a Republican view, that's all bad because, you know, we've got to defend the oil industry. Now, look, you've got enough people out there who are willing to invest in the oil companies because, as Republicans will tell you, the oil companies made a ton of money. Huge profits gouging you at the pump. Huge, enormous profits gouging you at the pump. But it's now passed both the House and the Senate. Biden's going to veto it. But it shows priorities. Now, look, I understand Manchin, and I'm not going to beat up on Manchin and Tester too much. They're in very conservative states. That this is probably going to matter because we're going to have the oil. But it does show the priority. It does show their priorities to me, especially on the Republican side, that every one of them, there's uniformity over there. They don't care about social or environmental stuff. Certainly don't care about good corporate governance.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming.